The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. A leper came to Jesus, and kneeling down, begged him and said, "If you wish, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand, touched him, and said to him, "I do will it. Be made clean." The leprosy left him immediately, and he was made clean. Then, warning him sternly, he dismissed him at once. He said to him, "See that you tell no one anything, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer for your cleansing what Moses prescribed. That will be proof for them." The man went away and began to publicize the whole matter. He spread the report abroad so that it was impossible for Jesus to enter a town openly. He remained outside in deserted places, and people kept coming to him from everywhere. The Gospel of the Lord. In some of the more epic tragedies, and even some of the more subtle tragedies, more often than not, it's a case of a small flaw or a small mistake of the hero that leads to his downfall. Even in the scriptures, we have the first king of Israel, Saul, a man of great virtue, stature, and military success, but one act of disobedience in the context of worship, and he lost everything. God took the kingship away from him and gave it to David. We see it in other such stories from myths from all cultures. And today's story isn't exactly an epic tragedy, but it does have a not-so-satisfactory ending. If you've heard one story of a cure of the leper, you've pretty much heard them all. But what we often need to look at are some of the details and the results of the miracle of this particular leper. Only the second miracle that is told in detail in the Gospel of Mark, and the end is not a good one. I mean, of course, at first we are moved by the devotion of the leper and the pity that Jesus shows to him. But by the end of the story, we are less than impressed with the disobedience of the leper to a very simple command: don't tell anyone anything, but go and fulfill what Moses prescribed. Now, on the one hand, I've had plenty of people who've heard me comment on this homily come up to me, usually right after the Mass. You all know how much time they don't waste in commenting on the priest and what he says, but more often than not, they come up to me and they say, "Oh, but Father, if I had a terrible life-threatening disease like leprosy or cancer or AIDS, and I was cured by the power of God, I would want to proclaim that from the rooftops." To which I answer, even if Jesus specifically told you not to? To which more often than not they respond, "Oh, but Jesus just has to understand." And isn't that the essence of all sin? I know better than God. I know God's standards, but I know better. Or if God's just an imaginary friend and not really a God, well, God will understand if I do what I want to do instead of what God commands me to do. And that's what basically the leper does. The same thing we see in the Garden of Eden, the original temptation to the original sin. What does the serpent say to the woman in the garden? "You will be like God, knowing good from evil." And if you are like God, of course, then you don't need God. That's the essence of all sin, is basic disobedience born from an attitude that somehow, someway, I know better than the command that has been given to me. But not only that, the leper's disobedience is compounded because it's not just a disobedience of Jesus, but it's a disobedience that goes all the way back to the law of Moses, which we hear in our first reading from the book of Leviticus. If someone is found to have a sore or a blemish that resembles leprosy, they're to present themselves to the priest. The priest verifies it is leprosy, and then they are to remain outside in deserted places, declaring unclean, unclean, because they are unclean. But they must be alienated from the rest of the community and dwell in isolated places. That's the reading we have today. It goes on, however, to give a very strict prescription of what is to happen if the leper is cured. If the leper is cured of his leprosy, he's to present himself again to the priest, who will examine him, verify that the leprosy has been cured, offer the cleansing sacrifices and sacrifices of thanksgiving to God for that cure, and then the leper is allowed back into society. This is what Jesus is referring to when he says, "Go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses prescribed." And the leper does neither of these things. He doesn't do what Jesus asked him to do, and he doesn't do what Moses prescribed in the tradition of a faith that this leper professes, the faith of Judaism. And so we have a double disobedience. Now, on the other hand, one might say, but the leper was getting the word out. He was letting people know that Jesus is here. He is the great healer. But what do we see as the result of that? On the one hand, it begins with the leper being a leper. He has to be in isolated places and alienated from the community. But how does the story end? It says, he spread the report abroad so that it was impossible for Jesus to enter a town openly. He remained outside in deserted places. A complete role reversal. The leper was alienated because of his leprosy. Now Jesus is alienated because of the leper's disobedience. With the best of intentions, perhaps, the leper's disobedience was not a help to Jesus, but in fact, a hindrance. A hindrance. And this happens frequently throughout the Gospel of Mark. It's almost amusing at times, because Jesus would say, "Tell no one anything," and they would still spread it abroad. At one point it even says, "The more he told them not to, the more they did." Welcome to the life of a priest, folks. Sometimes I wonder, the best way to get Catholics to do something is for the priest to ask them not to do it. And we have that in the scriptures here today. And in one occasion, Jesus even says to the recipient, "Don't even go into the village. Take the long way around." Almost humorous. But at a certain point in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus asks that question, "What are people saying about me? Who do people say the Son of Man is?" And what are the answers? Well, some say you're John the Baptist. Some say you're Elijah. Some say you're Jeremiah. In other words, they're getting it wrong. They're completely flubbing the message. Those who just go out and in disobedience think they're spreading the good word, but they're spreading the wrong word. And it's when Jesus asks those who have obeyed him, "Who do you say that I am?" that they give the response they had been trained to come to understand, whereupon Jesus still says, "Don't tell anyone." So we see, perhaps with the best of intentions, while we're moved by the devotion of the leper and the pity that Jesus has for him, we are not impressed with the leper's disobedience of a very basic command that Jesus gives him and a traditional point of the law given by Moses. And we see the fruits of simple, basic disobedience. Nice to see that not much has changed in 2,000 years of Christian tradition. How many, either here or people we know, I certainly as a priest have encountered it, of people who say they are devout Catholics, they are devout members of the church, they are stalwart followers of Christ, they love Jesus, they love coming to Mass, they love receiving the sacraments. But the minute the church gives a teaching that they don't particularly like or agree with, or that's particularly not as popular, especially the ones regarding love, marriage, procreation, and so on, well, then the church really has to get with the times. The church is somewhat old-fashioned. The church has to be more scientific-minded, less sexist, or whatever label they like to have. In other words, we in our modern mindset know better than an old-fashioned church who teaches us something we just simply don't like or just don't want to follow. Perhaps all of us, one way or another, are guilty of even perhaps some small disobediences in our own lives. And it's perhaps apropos that we hear a gospel such as this on this last Sunday of ordinary time before we enter into a season in which we are called to recognize in what ways we can turn away from sin and be faithful to the gospel. And of course, I'm referring to the season of Lent, which begins, believe it or not, this Wednesday, on Valentine's Day. So folks, have your Valentine's Day dinner on Mardi Gras, because this year, Valentine's Day is a day of fasting, because it is Ash Wednesday. But even look at the season of Lent. I don't know what experience you've had with one another, but I certainly know as a priest, Lent sometimes can be a very frustrating time as a priest or a shepherd of souls, because there's one thing I can say about it is Lent is a time in which Catholics do one of two things, and there really is no gray area. They either make sacrifices or they make excuses. They demonstrate what good Catholics they are, or they demonstrate what good lawyers they are. I tell you, there are some people I know who seem to be more aware of the exceptions and the loopholes than they are of the actual traditions. And they make up reasons why they don't really need to fully get into the spirit and the practice of a season of Lent designed to help us grow in that faith, to help us grow closer, not just to God as individuals, but to one another as people who make up the church, the community of faith. The things we do individually, such as the acts of prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, folks, it's not prayer, fasting, or almsgiving. It's prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, the individual sacrifices we observe, which in fact invite temptation to disobey, to skewer, and to kind of skirt around these practices for our own discipline and spiritual enrichment, in which time we don't give in, but rather we turn to God in prayer and grow closer to God, sabotaging a time of temptation and turning it into an opportunity to grow closer to God. And the things we do together as a community, the 2 days of fasting on Ash Wednesday and Good Friday, the days of abstinence of Fridays during Lent and Ash Wednesday. On the one hand, one might say, well, Father, I really don't do those because I don't get anything out of it. And my answer to that is, well, it's not about you. You may as well say, I don't eat turkey on Thanksgiving because I don't get anything out of it. I don't have barbecues on Super Bowl Sunday because I really don't get anything out of it. I don't shoot fireworks on the 4th of July because I really don't get anything out of it. I really need to get over myself because I focus everything on myself whenever I think of anything. But it's something we do together to solidify our connection with one another as Catholic people and as Christian people, which are those days of fasting and abstinence during the season of Lent. And it's all designed to strengthen us as a people of faith, but in many ways it does invite temptation, the excuse-making, the loopholes we like to get around, in which not only are we shirking the directive, the encouragement, and the obligations we receive as a church, but are disregarding practices of piety that have been around since the time of Moses. The practices of prayer, of fasting, and almsgiving as discipline to help us overcome our sinfulness, master our temptations, and grow closer to God as individuals and to one another as a community of faith. So this is perhaps the perfect gospel for us to hear before we enter into Lent this Wednesday, on Ash Wednesday. And so let us take these days, and not wait till the last minute to decide how we're going to observe Lent, but take these days to psych ourselves up, to recognize perhaps the small disobediences we engage in, what exercises and sacrifices in particular are needed for us as we enter into this season of penance, of turning away from sin, and being faithful to the gospel. And let us find the lesson in the story of the leper, that basic disobedience is in fact a hindrance to Christ and the work he does in and through his church. And let us pray that as we prepare to enter the season of Lent, that we hear this story of the leper, which is not an epic Greek tragedy, but nonetheless a lesson that we learn, that hopefully we seek to do the opposite. Not by our disobedience will we be a hindrance to the continued work of God, but by our obedience to even the most basic of commands, to the most difficult of teachings of the church, we give ourselves in full devotion to Christ, become a help to him and his spread of the gospel throughout the world, and so enrich ourselves individually and as a community of faith as we in an ongoing way turn away from sin, be faithful to the gospel, and obedient to the commands of Christ in and through the tradition of the church.